Bob Dylan. Anyone seen the new Bob Dylan movie? Yeah, it was pretty good. Like Rolling Stone. Well, today we're going to take a takeoff on that song. Not really. That takeoff of the song that Bob Dylan wrote is a takeoff on what Palm Sunday is. This is the beginning of the High Holy Week for Christians all over the country. It starts with Palm Sunday, which is the week before Easter Sunday. I'm going to explain that today. And in Palm Sunday, the question is, who will you serve? That's the question. Palms are nice. Palms are sweet. I'm going to explain them. But it's about who do you serve? Not who do you say you serve. And I don't mean like volunteer for. That's a good thing. I'm talking about who do you lay your life down for? That's the question between Palm Sunday. Let's pray before I go any further. God, I am just humbled to be able to talk about transcendent things that have altered the course of history. And I am, I don't feel worthy of it, but man, I'm so thankful that I get to do it. And I am praying that all of us see things about you and ourselves in Holy Week that we haven't seen before, and something changes inside of us. I pray these things according to the character and identity of Jesus. Amen. Holy Week starts with Palm Sunday. It goes to what's known as Maundy Thursday, which is the Last Supper celebration when Jesus instituted the Last Supper on Thursday, which we have all of our crossroads sites. And then it goes to Good Friday service, and then it goes to Easter service. This thing we're talking about, though, today is Palm Sunday. It's about recognizing what it is you lay your life down for. And there's three things, three key elements that are in this story that are not random. They seem like they're just interesting things there, but they're specific things they're trying to communicate a spiritual point to us. Let's go ahead and read the story. It comes from Matthew chapter 21. It's actually in every book of the all four of Jesus' authorized biographies, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's in all four of those. It says he comes into Jerusalem. He's been up to this point. He's been out in all the sort of suburbs of Jerusalem, out in the hick towns of Jerusalem, at least what Jerusalem would say is the hick towns, the small areas out around the Sea of Galilee and all these places. And he's been doing great things. He's been teaching great things. But now he's coming into the big time. He's coming into Jerusalem. Because as the Jews were all around, they would gather there for their high holy week of Passover. So everyone's coming, and this is sort of when Jesus actually gets put on display, and people are waiting for him. They've heard stories about him. They're wondering what he's about, and they are hoping that he's going to do for them what they want him to do for them. Here's how the story goes. I'll read the Matthew version, Matthew 21. Now, when they drew near to Jerusalem and came to Bethphage to the Mount of Olives, then Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go into the village in front of you, and immediately you'll find a donkey tied and a colt with her. Untie them and bring them to me. And if anyone says anything to you, you shall say, 'The Lord needs them,' and he will send them at once." Apparently, Jesus has pre-ordered, if you will, a donkey and a colt. And he's gone into town, or he sends somebody in to deal with it, and they've worked this owner out where he is, and we're going to have this right. So he says to the disciples, "Okay, we got this all worked out. Just go in there and get these things and bring them. Tell them the Lord needs them." Maybe this guy who owns the colt and the donkey had a significant experience with Jesus and now looks at him as the Lord, not just a teacher, a miracle worker. But he's like, "Oh, you're the guy? Okay, good." He gives it to him. And the question, or the verse continues here. "This took place to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet, saying, 'Say to the daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming to you humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a beast of burden.'" Jesus is aware that there are prophecies that have been written about the coming Son of God, about the Messiah, about the Christ. And so he's going through and sort of checking these off, like, the Son of God, the Christ, used a donkey. Let's have this handled. Let's deal with this. He's fulfilling prophecy. Verse 6, and the disciples went and did as Jesus had directed them, and they brought the donkey and the colt and put on them their cloaks, and he sat on them. Most of the crowd spread their cloaks on the road. So here we have the first sort of prop of Palm Sunday we're going to talk about today. It is the cloak. The cloak. The cloak is something you lay your life down for. They took off their cloaks and they laid them on the donkey and they put it on the ground, kind of like those old Western movies. I don't know if they ever did this or not. Remember those old Western movies when it's a muddy dirt road and some damsel is walking across the road and some cowboy figure comes up and takes his coat off, puts it on the mud puddle and lets her walk. I don't know if that ever happened or not for real. But it's kind of in the same vein. People are taking off their cloaks, putting them down. It's a sign of honoring royalty. It's what you would do for royalty. And this is the big question today. Who will you lay your life down for? What are you laying your life down? You have to serve somebody. So all of us do lay our life down for somebody. All of us do lay our life down for something. All of us have an overriding narrative that's guiding our life, even if you don't know what it is, because we are wired to make sense of our life and know why we're doing what we're doing and how do we filter things to make decisions. So your thing that you lay your life down for, your guiding principle, it could be money, could be money, it could be women, it could be men, it could be status. It could be accomplishments, which is why we always try to do new things. Or for some people, it's why they always got to hang their degrees on their wall. Like, we really don't care, but I know you do. Hang our degrees in the wall. If that's us, some people, it's our body. It's our body is our guiding thing. And so, like, if you gain 5 pounds and it's your body, it's crisis mode. Oh, my gosh, I gained 5 pounds. Oh, no, I can't. What is your thing? For some people, it's power. And it may not be sex, but sex is maybe the way they have power over somebody. They have multiple partners because they feel the power over that person. For other people, it's fame. For other people, it's the perfect image of family. You're laying your life down for the perfect image of family. And so when your family starts later than you thought it should, you're in a crisis situation. When something happens in your family that's difficult or shameful, it's a crisis situation. And again, all of us have an overriding objective to our life, something that we serve, something that is the most important thing. If it's money, like this is a rough week for everybody, I guess this last week, if it's money, if you got stocks and bonds, there's this thing called the. Remember that from Dumb and Dumber, the? You don't. Okay. I'm not talking about that T word. Tariffs. Tariffs. Woo! Man, tariffs. Now, your reaction to whatever happened in the market is a function of a lot of things. It's a function of how much you have in the market. It's also a function of how much you understand the market. They go up and down. It's also a function of how important investments are to you. The more important money is to you, the more you lay down your life for, the more you ultimately serve money, the more catastrophic and difficult this last week will be. Where if you don't and you don't have any stocks, it's been a fine week, no problem. What's the big deal? Do you know what it is? Do you know what it is? Because you have something. It is. These people are laying down their jackets to royalty. You're the one that we want. You're the one we want to serve, or at least it looks that way. Not really. Let's keep reading here. And others cut branches from the trees and spread them on the road. And the crowds that went before him and that followed him were shouting, "Hosanna to the Son of David! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest." So this is the second prop, if you will. It's not just the cloaks. It's the palms. They're throwing down palms. And for sure, if they're throwing down palms, they're waving palms, that would have been a normal thing to do at that point. And what are the palms about? If the jacket is a statement of service, if the cloak is a statement of what I'm serving, the palms are a statement of freedom. They're a sign for Israel of their freedom. They're waving their palms, wanting their freedom. I don't know anybody who doesn't want freedom. All of us want to be able to do what we're able to do. All of us want to be able to be in control of our own life. All of us shun and hate shackles that are put on us or things that box us in. All of us, we all want our freedom. Crossroads is about freedom. You getting free in relationship with God, and we spend significantly for that. Jesus spent significantly for our freedom. He dies on a cross, which we're going to get into in great depth on Good Friday. And Crossroads also spends for our freedom because we invest in things that could bring more people into spiritual freedom. We had the ability this last Monday, I don't know if you were there, everyone who made 10X commitments, the push for 10X commitments, were invited to our Dayton dedication service. We were dedicating that building. For those of us there, was that not really awesome? It was great. You can clap for it. It's a beautiful building. It's a beautiful building. Taking our Dayton community to the next level, a tool to bring more people freedom. One of the people I met there that I was so thankful to meet, because it was just earlier in the day, I was looking at some videos of that were showing this week and next week of people who've had their lives changed and have been made free by what Jesus has done for them. And I met this woman, like, oh, I just previewed your video today. Thank you. It was amazing. You probably want to see it. Let's look at it.
I was in a place where I was desperate, depressed, very anxious. At one point, I was suicidal. My marriage was in ruins. I didn't feel like my kids cared or that they hated me. Nothing that I did could take those feelings away. I needed to find myself again. Woman Camp started showing up in ads on Facebook. Checked into it, and I'm like, oh, this sounds really interesting, you know, because I'm kind of soul searching and trying to figure out what it was that I was lacking. When I signed up, I was scared. I didn't know anybody. I didn't ask friends if they wanted to go. A little over halfway down, I started feeling very heavy. You know, I had it in my head that he wasn't going to meet me there. God wasn't going to be there. You know, I had doubted that his existence for my entire life. I was begging for him to show me he does love me and that he is there. So then we went out to Solitude. You know, we have our little book and we get into this book, and it was talking about how I was feeling, which at the time was anxious and depressed and, you know, worthless and lost. And they had a spot out there. They had rocks and chains, all of the words that I was feeling, all the lies. I wrote them on the chain, and I'm reading this message from God. And I broke in a good way that I had never felt. It was a gut punch. That volunteer came over and placed her hand in the middle of my back to comfort me. I felt this surge, you know, a wave come over me, up over my head and down my back. I knew that was the turning point for me, because I knew that I was forgiven. In that moment, I couldn't believe it, because after everything I had said and done in my life to people that cared about me and loved me and to myself, I didn't think that was possible. And there he was. I was like, you know what, girls? I'm doing it. I'm going to go down and get baptized. And as soon as I hit the water, it was silent. It was dark. I had died. And when they pulled me back out of the water, it was so bright and so amazing. Before I went to Woman Camp, my husband and I had a conversation. At that point, I wasn't sure where our marriage was going to go. When I was there with them in the prayer tent, God showed me that was my person. That's who I'm meant to be with. I walked in the door and I'm smiling ear to ear, and he's just like, immediately he could see a change. And then he signed up for Man Camp for this year because he just saw such a change that he wanted that too. It's been, you know, a really great transformation in our relationship. And I'm like, you know, this experience, it was something. We need to go check out the church. You know, had our first service and we're like, this is great. My 16-year-old came with us once to Crossroads. And when we left, he was like, that was actually pretty cool. I really like that. Fast forward to now, he's bringing all of his friends and his brother. His brother was very much in the other direction and he saw such a change. He's like, I want some of that. The Jennifer then died. I mean, that girl is gone. Future is very bright. I started going back to school and I'm taking theology so I can, you know, get to know him even deeper. My marriage is flourishing. My kids are thriving. It's a whole different view now. Our house isn't dark. It's so bright. You know, so bright in there.
He still sets people free. He still, for all those who would lay down their life for him. Now, while the palm branch is a symbol for freedom, let's go a little deeper here because all is not as well as it actually looks. In the history of the Jews, the palm branch was meant to be a sign of freedom. It was meant to be something that they would shake. In the book of Leviticus, written hundreds of years earlier, in the Old Testament, here's what it says. It says, and you shall take on the first day of the fruit of the splendid trees, branches of palm trees, and boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. So rejoicing who God is, rejoicing in freedom, using it that way. But there's something else that's actually happening here. There's actually something that's a bit sinister that's going on here. It would be very common to take palms and lay them on the ground when a king was walking in, kind of like along the line with what the cloak is. But there's actually something different here that's happening that scholars are pretty united on. The palm, while it was a universal sign of victory and freedom, there's something else happening here. When the gladiators would win, they would have a palm. When you had a win in the Olympics, the ancient Olympics in Greece, they'd give you a palm, put a garland around your head to signify that you had won. Constantine memorialized this on the coins with the garlands. It was important to them. But it was also something in their history that is influencing this. 150 years earlier, the Greeks had taken over this region and they had taken over the Jews' high holy temple in Jerusalem. And in that temple, he hadn't just defiled the temple by going in it. He defiled the temple by going in it where only the priests should go in the Holy of Holies and took out the holy objects and used them for other things. Of course, this was horrendous for the Jewish people. And they just had to take it until there was a family that rose up, the Maccabees. And the Maccabees was led by one of their strong men. His name was Judas, Judas Maccabees, and they called him the Hammer. And so he led a revolt, and they kicked out the Greeks. They took back over the temple, and this was a massive monumental thing. It was an 8-day conflict. And this has led to what the Jews celebrate today with Hanukkah, about the retaking of the temple and the Maccabean revolt. 2 Maccabees 10:7 memorializes this event, says this. This is not in the Bible. It's one of the intertestamental books for some people of faith. Carrying green palm branches, the people paraded around singing grateful praises. And there's a coin that's been archaeologically dug up that shows this scenario, the palm branch, Judas Maccabeus, and all that stuff. This is what's happening here with Jesus. They are thinking that Jesus is the next Judas Maccabeus, that he is coming to upend this political oppression that they have at the hand of Rome, at the same way that the hammer did when the Greeks had oppressed the Jews. They are hearing and wanting this Jesus who we've heard raises the dead, heals people, calms the sea. That guy, that power, we need right here, right now. In fact, he's coming to the holy city right now, the center of Roman power, where they've sent up their thrones and all that stuff. He's coming here. And so everyone hears that this guy who's been out, he's making his grand entrance. They're like, oh, this could be the guy. This is it. All we need him to do is what he does, and we could have freedom right now, the kind of freedom that we want. Now, I've got to tell you this. Relax, here we go. Trigger warning. I'm just telling you right now, everybody is going to get a little bit offended, okay? If you're not offended at first, you're going to be offended, okay? So trigger warning, just so you know, trigger warning. And this is a trigger warning. I'm telling you why it's a trigger warning. Because I think, no matter what some of you say, I don't think you've laid your life down for Jesus. I think we are trying to co-opt Jesus for the life that I want, instead of having Jesus co-opt my life for the life that he wants. It's a very subtle thing to lay your life down before Jesus. The difference between that and co-opting Jesus to validate your life and to do for you what you want done for you. And so, as the Jews are doing this, what they're saying is, Jesus, oh yeah, lead the political revolt. Come on, free us. You're the next hammer. You know what this is like? This would be like waving a MAGA hat. This would be like waving an LGBTQIA+ flag. This would be like waving Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, Red Hammer and Sickle, Crossroads Trail Marker. It is anything that isn't Jesus. Anything that isn't Jesus, that Jesus may be okay with. He may be. But the main thing is that thing that we serve. Anything that isn't Jesus is a false idol that God wants to shatter. Anything. And the problem is, we don't really know, because few of us are self-aware enough, few of us are really aware enough to know, am I really into Jesus? Is God really my thing? We think he is, but many of us think that because we just think he's approving of the choices that I'm making right now. And as soon as something pushes on you, can't tell you how many people tell me I should be talking more about the political situation. Can't tell you. I just got another email last time. They think like if more people are on the email, then it's more going to be listened to more by me. No, it's not. No, I'm not against talking about politics sometime. I'm not. I mean, someday, maybe if something will happen, I'm like, okay, I need to say something about this. But nowhere even close, because I want to talk about Jesus. I don't want to talk about politics. And here's the thing that's so interesting. People on either sides are upset that something should be said about something. You know? Who claim the name of Jesus? You know if something has a hold on you based on how you react when it's taken away from you. Like when you lose money and money's your thing, your reaction goes, whew, money was a bit important to me. When you lose your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your reaction to that shows how wedded you are, how much you needed that person. When you lose or gain 5 pounds, like some of us, lost 5 pounds. Well, gained 5 pounds, interesting. Others of us, like my belt. Oh my gosh, there's another loop. Oh no, crisis mode. These people who are doing this for Jesus, I don't think they're interested in Jesus at all. I don't think they're interested at all. I don't think they're a fan of him at all. In fact, they might have liked him as soon as he came in, and it's like Jesus goes out of his way the next several days to just piss everybody off. Yeah, I just said that word. Yeah. I probably pissed you off that I said piss off, didn't I? Because that's probably a word. You're probably pissed to hear that in church, aren't you? You're probably, just turn your neighbor. By the way, that's why we have a thing called Kids Club, in case you wonder. That's why we have it. Just turn your neighbor. Just say that word. Go ahead. Get out of your system. No, you don't have to do that. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding. The next week, all these people who are waving flags, because he doesn't do what they want, they will all abandon him. Let me tell you what happens from this point on. He's going to go directly to the temple. And he's going to overturn the money changers' table, people who are making money in the temple. It's one of the times you see Jesus get really, really, really upset. That's why here at Crossroads, we never sell anything in the atrium. We don't have any book resource centers or anything. We're like, one time Jesus got really, really mad and people were selling something in the atrium. So we're just never going to do that. Turns it over the tables, and people are upset about it. He goes from there, and he sees this fig tree with these nice, you know, leaves. He walks up the fig tree, and he sees this beautiful leaves, but there's no figs, and he curses it. He puts a curse on the fig tree because the fig tree represents many of us who look real good, but there's no fruit in our life. We look really cool and sweet, but when you look at the fruit doesn't represent anything about God. We just look good. We look moral. We look nice. We look happy. And Jesus curses it, and when he comes back around, it's dead. Cursing things. He questions authority. He talks about a son who doesn't do the will of the Father. And when he talks about a son who doesn't do the will of the Father, he's talking to all the Jews. You're the children of God, and you don't do the will of the Father. That's not a very affirming message. Not at all. He goes from there, and he talks about tenants who are owning the land, and the manager or the owner of the land sends a messenger, and the tenants kill the messenger, saying to them, the prophets you used to kill, you always killed the prophets. And now there's one coming, hint, it's me, and you're going to kill me like you always do. You always resist the will of God. Why are you, Jesus, you just got this crowd. Everyone's happy, but man, you're pushing. He tells the story of a wedding feast. He says, all the elite people, the people who are the cool kids, the people who have all the stuff going, they're invited to the feast, and they say, I just don't have time. I got stuff to do. I my cow's giving birth. I got this. I can't come. And the person representing God says, okay, well, I won't take any of that. I'm going to go to the people who are the least of them. I'm going to go to the people who just don't have all that they have and are struggling and are hurting. I'm going to compel them to come. Talks about taxes. Whew, taxes. That'll get people fired up. Say, what should we do with the tax situation? What should we do? What, should we pay to Caesar? He says, hey, let me see the coin. Can I see the coin? They give him the coin. He goes, huh, it's a coin. Sure enough, it's a coin. Whose image is on that? They go, Caesar's. Oh. Well, so if his image is on, I guess that's his. So just give to Caesar what's his. You shouldn't be upset about taxes. My gosh, I just said some of you are going to blow a freaking lid. Don't suck taxes! I'm not saying I'm a fan of taxes. I'm not saying we have a tax code that I'm excited about. I'm just saying it's never going to have my affections like Jesus has my affections. I'm just saying none of these things are going to get me fired up like Jesus is. And so guess what Jesus says? Oh, let's give Caesar. Why is Jesus saying that? He says this, because you know, he implies this, you know whose image is on you? God. You're made in the image of God. So give yourself to God. All of yourself, give it to God. Give Caesar the coin. Who cares? That's not your destiny. That's not your identity. But you have the image of God stamped on your heart. That's who you are. Give it to God. Whew. People did not like that. Then he gives the seven woes, the religious leaders, like, woe is you, woe, woe, woe. And I say woe, I mean woe. Seven, woe, woe. He burns all the bridges of all the palm flaggers, all of them. We know this because at the end of the week, he goes to get tried, and Pilate actually likes him. He's like, oh, I like this guy. Pilate is the Roman governor who oversees the region here, and he's kind of, him and his wife are kind of smitten with Jesus. And they're like, huh, I like this guy. He thinks he's going to get him off. He says, I don't know what to do. I'll tell everybody, there's a tradition that whoever you want me to release, you can have. So here's your options. There's Jesus of Nazareth and Barabbas, this criminal, this horrible guy. He puts them up. And what do you know? What do you know? What do you know? The same people who are, woo-hoo! When he give them the choice, they say, Barabbas, we want him, Barabbas, Barabbas. They're going, Jesus, Barabbas, we want Barabbas. We want they elect to have him killed, the same people. Why? Because he didn't do what they wanted him to do. Because he wasn't about what they were about. A lot of us have to come to places where we evaluate our faith, perhaps deconstruct our faith before we construct it again. Like, look at our faith. And do I believe this? That's good and healthy to do. But without exception, the people I know who have walked away from the faith, who claim to be a person of faith, without exception, it's always because they didn't get what they wanted. They didn't get what they thought they would get with God. They thought they would have a pain-free life, and they didn't. They thought that they would rise and have the family beautiful, and they haven't. They thought that there would be this clarity and they would always know the right thing to do, and they still don't, because God doesn't tell us everything like a blueprint. They thought that it was, and it's because we were waving our flag, because I came to faith because God was going to do in my life what I wanted him to do in my life, and God will have none of it. No, he will do in your life what he wants to do in your life. And he'll do it when he wants to do in your life. And if you lay your life down before him, lay yourself on the altar, it will be okay whatever you do, whatever he does. It's about him. And this leads us to the third significant thing here in Palm Sunday. We've got the cloak, we've got the palms, and we have the donkey. Come along now, donkey. We have the donkey. The donkey. Yes, the donkey. Why the donkey? Why is this? Well, Jesus is going through and he's checking the box on the prophecies. He's doing these prophecies. Not only is he checking the box on these prophecies, but these prophecies are in there because the prophets, without knowing this, the prophets have been inspired with this prophecy because God knew the situation that would exist in the first century that made this prophecy necessary. Here's the prophecy in the book of Zechariah, chapter 9. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you, righteous and having salvation, as he, humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. There's actually two animals. It's redundant. It's a form of parallelism. There's actually two animals. You don't ever see one, but there's two. Same, just different names for same animal. A donkey. Why this? It's like God is setting up the prophets to clue Jesus in on the solution of all these palm branch wavers who want their way and want Jesus to validate them. It's like, here's what we do. We don't come in with a big white horse that a conquering hero comes in. We come in on a donkey. We come in on the most stupid animal there is, that's stubborn, isn't inspired by anybody. It's slow. It doesn't run. If you were a conquering king and you were coming into a town, you would always come in on a horse or a white horse. Spoiler alert, that happens later. It's in the book of Revelation. That's yet to come. Or if there's no white horse there, the conqueror walks into the city. Jesus comes on a donkey, and what he's saying here is, I'll have none of it. I'll have none of it. You wanting your way and wanting me to fit into your agenda? Nope. I'll have none of it. I'm going to send you a signal that I'm not going to be your political hero. I'm not going to be your political conqueror. I'm not going to be the guy who does what you want to have done. I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. Riding on a donkey. This is sort of the beginning of the pinprick of public sentiment going away. As it was sinking in for people, like, wait, donkey. Well, I don't understand this. It's because As we follow false gods and false idols for our life and lay our life down for the wrong thing, we bring with it a whole host of really bad assumptions for how God operates. And those assumptions lead us away from having a life of power. When you have anything other than God that you bow down to, that you serve, you can't see the ways of God because you keep expecting God to do what you want him to do through the lens of who you want God to be. And God isn't on anybody's side except his side. That's whose side he's on, his. And we wave our flags and get all confused on it. Something breaks inside of us. That's why we become anemic spiritually. We have the sort of spiritual weakness that permeates our culture. And I don't mean just American culture. I mean church culture. I mean professing Christian culture. We have to lay down our life for somebody. We have to lay it down on the altar. Jesus is coming into Holy Week to lay it down on the altar, on the cross. What will you do this week, Holy Week?